Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Ryan Moran, welcome to the show.
Craig, the most disciplined man in the world. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
This is going to be really, really great. And so I want to welcome everybody to a great episode of Early to Rise Radio with Ryan Moran, the author of 12 Months to 1 Million, one of the books that I've recommended the most in my entire career. So Ryan, I just want to say thanks of all. You know, I learned a lot reading this book, and it was like getting a lot of the lessons that, you know, I had kind of known, but you have really put them into place. So just tell us a little bit about, you know, why you wrote this book.
Well, first of all, thank you for being my influencer.
Yeah.
I do get a lot of people saying that Craig sent me over to the book. It's funny, Craig. This is so silly of me. I wrote the book because I wanted to finally have the last piece of content that I ever made about how to have $1 million business.
Oh, cool.
This is what everybody was asking me to have because I had taught it in my videos and in our training areas and stuff like that. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to put the manual together and then no one will ever ask me to talk about this process ever again. Of course, that's exactly what happened, Craig.
Right.
You know, I wrote the book and it became a bestseller. And now everybody asks me to talk about it, which is fine. Now that I have kind of the manuscript and the manifesto out there, it's much more fun to talk about because I can send them back to it. Because it's the playbook. You know, when people ask me for the details, like how do I take my first sale? How do I get to 50 sales a day? How do I cross the first million? I just reference them back to the chapter and send them right back to that. So I really wrote it to free myself up of the burden of going deep with every single person, just give them the roadmap to having a seven-figure business. And we've had, I mean, I can count over 300, I think it's over 500 people now who have taken the process and built a seven-figure business as a result.
It's amazing. And it truly is, like, if someone's starting a business or, you know, has even built their business to $1 million, like, go back and read it. It truly is a great playbook. So how did you go from Cleveland to selling on Amazon to Capcom to starting your incubator? Just tell us everything. How did this journey come together?
Sure. I mean, I was an internet marketer, which is like a fancy way of saying that I knew just enough about marketing and sales to have no idea what I was doing with my life.
Right.
You know, right. And like, we know these people, Craig, and some people listening may know some of these people very well who understand Facebook ads and understand sales and understand email marketing and understand newsletters, and understand podcasting and know all of these tactics, but you don't really have the business backbone behind it. I remember one time someone looked at what I was doing and was like, so do all of you marketers just stay in business by selling things to each other? Like, is that how this works? And it was like, well, I mean, some people do.
Yeah, but, exactly.
But I never felt good about that. And I wanted to have the real business behind that. And Craig, you know, I hit a point at which Google algorithms changed and the recession hit in 2008. I saw how weak the foundation was if all I knew was marketing. Like if all I knew was marketing or all I knew was sales, then I was a marketing guy, not a businessman. I never got into this because I wanted to understand marketing on a deep level. Marketing was a proxy for me to build a business that gave me freedom and gave me joy and allowed me to express my passions. Mm-hmm. It was the route to all of those other things. And what I discovered was that when I applied all those marketing tactics, even a little bit, to something that was a real business, lo and behold, it works really, really well, Craig. Yeah. So what I discovered for myself was the fastest way to have a seven-figure business, which I did not have when I started out on the journey, was if I just had four products that consistently sold 25 sales a day, that was 100 sales a day. And at a $30 average price point, that was $3,000 in top line sales. And $3,000 per day in top line sales was $1 million business. And that was a really good starting point. And so all the things that I had learned about email marketing or search engine optimization or social media marketing or what have you, when applied to a real business, became a seven-figure business in a 12-month span, or a lot of times much less. And it often takes far less effort and far less time than people expect. And so one of my businesses now is I run an incubator where I invest in these businesses with our students. We don't just teach it. It's not a course. We actually get our hands dirty, recommend agencies, get clear on their vision, help them do a launch. And then sometimes we invest in those businesses. And that is the now the capitalism incubator.
Got it. But is it true, at least on your Instagram, that you wanted to be a preacher when you were a kid?
True. Yeah, but not just as a kid, from ages 15 to, until my first stint in college. Yeah. I was in college thinking I was going to be a pastor.
Wow.
And I don't know if you can relate to this, Craig, but a lot of us entrepreneurs kind of come out of the womb wanting to be something different. Like, you know that you're not like everybody else.
Definitely.
And I don't know what that is. Like, what gene mutation gives us that? I have no idea, Craig, but that was me. And then life happens sometimes. You know, life happens and it throws you curveballs and it takes you down different roads. And one of mine was that, you know, when my parents split, I got deeply immersed in my church. That was my safe place. It was my solace. It was where I got my meaning and my purpose. And I almost had a sense of guilt over wanting to be wealthy. And so the natural thing for me to do was say, you know, what is a leader who loves to communicate and is deeply entrenched in the church do? He or she becomes a pastor. Wow. And that was the route that I went on. But the entire time that I was even in ministry school, I just felt like this isn't me. Like, I'm born to be in business. I am born to pursue something else. I'm born for more. That desire never gets satisfied until you allow it to come forth. And thankfully, I had a wonderful pastoral ministries professor who said, if you can do anything else and still be happy, please do that other thing. Because if you do not feel like it is an absolute must for you to pursue ministry, you should not do this. And I said, thank you. That is my permission slip. I'm going to go be an entrepreneur.
I mean, that kind of goes for anything. Like, if you're not really happy.
I agree.
So you were not one of those entrepreneurs who was starting the lemonade stand at 3.5.
Oh no, it wasn't a lemonade stand. It was actually digging worms out of my backyard, digging the worms, putting them into a container and making a sign that said, great bait, so don't wait.
You know, no way.
Get worms for 5 cents. And if you remember what Dwight Schrute says in The Office about 5 cent worms, you're way overpaying for your worms, man. Get a new worm guy. But you know, I it was baseball cards. It was mini. I once took all of the junk in my bedroom and then made a sign for mini garage sale and waved at every car driving by that I was having a mini garage sale, which meant I had a box of things.
How old were you then?
I was selling. I was probably 6 at that point. I took pictures door to door that I drew on computer paper and tried to sell them for a penny each. That was 5 or 6. I flipped baseball cards just like Gary Vee. I was reading stock market journals when I was 11, 12, 13. My friends thought I was super weird. Yeah. So no, I know I absolutely was born with the gene. However, I quieted, I held it back with that entrepreneurial, with like the guilt that I felt like I have to go do this thing in ministry. Like, I have to go suppress my own desire to go be in ministry. I just couldn't hold it back anymore. And thankfully somebody gave me permission to let that go and go do what I really wanted to do, which was entrepreneurship.
So essentially it went dormant for like 5 or 6 years.
That's there. Right. I mean, wow. It doesn't really go dormant. It just gets loud and annoying.
Yeah.
It's just like any desire. No desire ever goes away. No desire. You can't really hold back desire. If you hold back desire, it just gets louder, right? You can suppress it and that comes out in all kinds of weird psychological things that you do, but it's very hard. Like, desire has to flow or else it just gets pent up.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, kind of like what your pastoral professor said to you is like, you know, if you don't like this, go do something else. you wrote in one of your posts that you got to love the underlying business. And I've got my fair share of stories around this too, but what do you mean by this? When did you realize this, and how did this affect, you know, your journey?
Yeah. Well, we love to complicate things with tactics and strategies and how to's as entrepreneurs. We get obsessed over those, but a lot of times we are using those as band-aids to cover up the fact that we don't actually enjoy the underlying business. We don't actually enjoy the doing of something. I used to think that freedom was doing something that you hate long enough to where you don't have to do it anymore. Now I realize that freedom is the doing. Yeah. Freedom is the actual process of what it is that you are doing. It is being so entrenched in what it is that you're doing that there's nothing else that you would rather do. And there are hard days. Yes, there are times when everything sucks. Sometimes there are years of that. But at the end of the day, there's nothing else that you would rather do. That is, the freedom is the doing. And so often we think of marketing or sales or business as the way to get the money so that then we can have the freedom. But I think that the irony is you will be much more profitable. You will make way more money if you can align those two things. If you can align the actual, my freedom is the doing of this, then like everything else takes care of itself. I find that to be especially true in e-commerce or with new entrepreneurs who are reading my book or following the plan to hit $1 million. It's hard to get yourself into the consistent action that is required to go build $1 million business if there is not at least, let's not call it passion, let's not call it love, let's just call it interest. If there is not genuine desire to bring something forth into the world. And if you don't have that, I would recommend you just wait until you have, again, let's just call it interest, a little bit of a spark for you to put that entrepreneurial drive behind something. Otherwise, I think you will just spin your wheels for many years. We all have peers who have done that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were very kind and you put one of my quotes in your book, you know, the success is simple once you accept how hard it is. And yes. I think that kind of goes with what you were saying there, because when you were talking about the desire, I was thinking like, yeah, there were days when, even though it felt like, you know, everything was going wrong in my life, I couldn't stop myself. Like, you know, I'd get up in the morning, it didn't matter how bad things were. I just really had this desire to go and write my fitness emails for so long. So the one thing with that, you got to love the underlying business, is the mistakes that I made were I sometimes started businesses because I thought they were going to make me a lot of money.
Right.
And none of those ever worked out. I don't know. Did you ever do that? Or have you ever seen other people make those mistakes?
I've never had something work out long-term that was just for the money.
Yeah.
I have had short-term wins. I have had projections of a lot of money, but I've never had anything of long-term success. In fact, I'll tell you, the business that I sort of document in 12 months to 1 million is a company that I built and sold called Sheer Strength Labs. And my partner and I, every time we launched a product that we were genuinely excited about, revenue went up. Every time we stopped and we did something for the numbers, we retraced. We went backwards. And part of that is because you're now diverting your focus. Like you're no longer defining the company that you're going to be. You are now just in the marketplace taking advantage of a short-term window. And so I think that you have to create a vision that is unique to you and follow the things that are in alignment with that vision and ignore what else is happening. So I've had many, many examples of doing things for the money and it not working out. And I wish it wasn't the case, Craig. Like my logical brain really, really wants to just see that there's money here and I want to follow that and do it and it works. But I just find that that's not the case. And I think we can chalk that up to energy. We can chalk it up to focus. But I just chalk it up to, if there's not a genuine interest underlying the business, you will not have the discipline and the focus in order for your brain and body to justify actually doing the work. And that's that. Like, there's a great, great saying Mark Manson wrote in his follow-up book, in his second book, Everything is Effed. he says that the brain has the logical brain, it has the emotional brain. And the logical brain is reading the map, but the emotional brain has its hands on the steering wheel. And the logical brain is saying, hey, we need to turn right up here. But the emotional brain is saying, you haven't talked to me in 5 minutes. I'm going left. And us, like, especially us dudes, we think so logically, but if we don't have genuine interest or desire or love or passion or any of those positive emotions towards something, the emotional brain will rebel. And like, we hate this as dudes. We hate this as entrepreneurs because everything should make sense and line up perfectly. And we should be able to do that. But we have two parts to us. We have the logical brain and the emotional brain. So I think the key is starting with a business that genuinely excites you or interests you, and then letting the logical brain figure out the path to get there. And when you line those things up, that and you accept the fact that everything is hard and you accept how hard it's going to be, then your plan to success is very simple.
Got it. I would love for you to maybe talk about one or two of your favorite stories of those 300 to 500 people who followed your blueprint, and just say, you know, like maybe choose one of where, you know, the person, like, here are the odds that are just totally stacked against this man or this woman. You know, maybe they're a single parent with a couple of kids. It's like, because everybody needs to see those stories where people have overcome the odds, because everybody's going against odds, but it's always great to see somebody going through more odds, be successful. If they can do it, we can do it. And then also, you know, any stories that you have around, like, it's insane, but this product or this niche market is like so ludicrous. You probably wouldn't even have heard of this, or it's just so wild that, but you can still build a seven-figure business with this. Anything, you got anything on that?
Yeah, a couple come to mind. The first one is my favorite success story. His name is Jason Franciosa. And Jason was, he actually was the runner up to a pitch contest to some big company for a $100,000 scholarship to start a business. Now, he was the runner up, which means he was first loser.
Yeah.
So he creates this great pitch for this thing, and he loses. And he had so much energy and emotion wrapped up in this idea, and kind of the $100,000 was all the world money in the world to him, and he didn't win. And so he gave up on the project and got a corporate job that he absolutely hated.
Wow.
One day he sees a Facebook ad for one of my programs that doesn't even exist anymore. You can't buy it. And he tells me that he spent his last, however much it was, $2,000 or $3,000 to get this training. And he like his last dollars. And it's funny. I remember when he joined, because he was the noob in the Facebook group asking all the annoying questions. And he just stayed at it. And he started this brand. It's called Element 26. It's a CrossFit brand. And one of the products is one of the best selling weightlifting belts in the marketplace. And Jason, he was like working full time while also scrapping everything he had together to make this thing take off, until it was doing like $20,000 a month in sales. And he continues to just like pound the pavement. And I remember I just watched him work so hard. I invited him out to my house for one of our like high level masterminds. And he's like, I have no business being here. And I was like, just like sit in the room and absorb everything you can. And he gets to $50,000 a month, and he gets to $80,000 a month. I had him on the podcast when he was at $80,000 a month. And we had this conversation about this mental shift he was having about realizing that he's been building his business for himself, but when he builds it for the customer, all of a sudden things start to take off. And we did this podcast together, and within a few months, he crossed $100,000 a month. Then COVID happens and his business crashes. And Jason basically writes to me in tears. Like, I don't know what to do. I like just left my corporate job. Like, I just was starting to get ahead. What do I do? And what he did was he doubled down, and it went from $1 million run rate to a $2 million run rate to a $4 million run rate to next year's projected to an $8 million run rate.
Wow.
He's now our head coach inside of our incubator. And last week I was at a team member's house for a barbecue, and one of the friends that was there said, hey, are you Ryan? Hey, I work for Jason at Element 26. I met one of your team members at CrossFit, and Jason hired me. So watching this company start to blossom, and then one day I'm wearing the belt at my gym, and my trainer says, hey, is that an Element 26 belt. I love those things. I recommend it to all my clients. Like all of those factors coming together just makes him stand out as one of the amazing success stories to me. The other
is that for the $100,000 project or contest, is that the business that he was trying to build?
I'm so glad you asked. Not even close.
Wow.
Completely different. Scrapped that idea, licked his wounds, dusted himself off, and says to this day, losing that $100,000 was the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah.
Losing that, like if I had gotten the scholarship, I would have built a business in a completely different direction that probably wouldn't have worked out. And that led me to discover this model, which has allowed me to keep the entire business equity-wise and build a multi-7-figure business that is well-positioned for an 8-figure exit.
And it just shows you the power of, you couldn't suppress the desire. You know, here this guy is getting, you know, slapped around after losing the 100,000. Then, you know, he's going working this corporate job. But still, when he saw the opportunity, you know, it's the last dollars on the credit card. And you know, that should be inspiring to everybody listening. So the second story you're going to tell.
The second story is just fresh in my mind because I just got off the phone with the person before the scheduled podcast. He sold gun holsters. Right? So it says gun holsters because he was the target market and he started selling them. And then he did the exact right thing that we talk about in the book, which is he started calling his customers instead of saying, why are you buying this? Why my product over everybody else's product? And what he discovered was that a large number of his customers were women. And women were telling him all the complaints that they had about the other products in the marketplace. Now, you don't think that gun holsters are going to be primarily women. But in his case, he was listening to all these women talk about how they're designed for men and how they don't fit their clothes and there's nowhere to put it on their body. And he is listening to all of these things and he starts developing and releasing products in that space specifically for women. And because of that, he had a very clear target market. He didn't have the whole target market, right? He didn't have all of the gun owners in America. His market was now female gun owners, which just you would not think to be where the money is. But because no one else was serving that crowd, he overserved them with products that was directly targeted to them. He hit a mid 7-figure run rate in about 2 years and got an offer to be acquired last year. And they acquired him for, you know, a life-changing amount of money to where he is set for the rest of his life if he wants to. And now we're exploring doing some projects together. So it's funny, you know, we've all experienced this, Craig, where you don't hear from your success stories until after they've been fully successful. You hear all the complainers right away, like your book is a scam, worst $21 I ever spent. But the person who actually took it and used it to build a 7-figure business just tells you, you know, after they've had a $4 million run rate. And so I was telling him, I was like, why haven't I heard from you earlier? Why is this the first time we're ever talking? And those types of stories happen all the time.
That's great, man. That's great. Now, you probably have a lot of stories of people who have come to your CapCon events. So you're back running them on stage again, and you did one this year?
Yes. Yeah, we just wrapped up 2 weeks ago.
And how many have you done there? And what are the, you know, for people who haven't heard of the events or never been to one, how would you describe those to folks?
Yeah, the Capitalism Conference is our annual Super Bowl. This is where I go to my network and I invite the most impactful entrepreneurs to inspire my audience, right? And the truth of the story is, Craig, that I started CapCon for myself because I was running a low 7-figure business. And I was like, all right, look, I've exceeded my expectations at this point. I don't know how to grow an 8-figure company. I don't know how to grow a 9-figure company. Like, and I don't have any peers that have done that. So how do I go get around the people that have done what I want to do? And so I just started paying them their speaking fees. And I sold tickets to offset the cost. And I said, if nobody else shows up, at least I'll have 2 or 3 days with these people, right? And the first one was my entire retained earnings. Like I laid everything on the line. It was like $500,000 and I spent it on Gary Vaynerchuk's speaking fee and Grant Cardone's speaking fee. And boy, do I have stories about Grant Cardone.
Yeah. And I spent that was the first year? You had those guys the first year?
Yeah. Huh? And I spent on Robert Hershevek's speaking fee and Jeff Hoffman's speaking fee. And I just went down the list. Tom Bilyeu's speaking fee. I just paid these guys like come in and like messed with my head for 3 days. Yeah. And thankfully I broke even. Yeah. I broke even that year. And so we've done that every year, minus 2020, of just going to our network and finding the most impactful people to challenge me and the rest of my audience. Because the truth is, like I've had a $10 million business. I've never had a $100 million business, right? I'm still on that journey. I'm still on that journey of my next level. And so I invite the people that challenge me. And sometimes, like this past Capcom, they're my students who have surpassed me. They're my students who have had, like there's one student on stage 1 month ago. 1 month ago, he set a record for our space. He had an exit of $610 million.
Wow.
And it had just closed a couple of weeks before the event, right? He's on stage challenging me and challenging our audience. And so that's why we do it, is for myself and my audience to be challenged and rise to a different level of thinking than we've been challenged to, and that you're challenged to when you go to other conferences or you go to pitch fests or being around your peers. And that's why we do the Capitalism Conference.
Amazing. Amazing. I mean, I've been to one and the audience is amazing and super successful. And now that you've kind of got, you had that, but now you're going next level with the incubator, which you talked about a little bit, but just tell us a little bit more about that as well.
The Capitalism Incubator is where I get my hands dirty and my team gets our hands dirty in helping entrepreneurs cast a vision for their seven-figure business that they can sell, where they have a profitable launch, and where we help build kind of the infrastructure and the relationships that they need in order to have the foundation of that business that they can scale and sell. And Jason, who I mentioned earlier, is one of our head coaches. One of our other coaches, Stan, has had a couple exits himself. I'm in there, and we're basically mentoring and guiding these members to cast a vision that really excites them. And then we have relationships with the agencies that they need. We have a list of investors who invest specifically in e-commerce brands, a list of
influencers. So everybody in the incubator is an e-commerce brand.
I mean, that's our default. You don't,
yeah, okay.
I would say 80% of them come in with an idea for an e-commerce brand.
Got it.
My favorite people to work with are people like gym owners or golf instructors.
Really? Why?
Or counselors that have an expertise in a space, and then we can help them cast the vision for the business that launches around them. Those are some of our favorite people to work with. But we have the kind of the stack of influencers that they can reach out to and partner with to help get the business off the ground. We have a list of investors that we bring into the group, a list of advisors and agencies. And those relationships make up the incubator so that every entrepreneur has the like a stacked deck of the room for them to be able to know everyone that they need to know in order to launch a seven-figure brand that they can sell.
Yeah. So how does the money work in your incubator? Is this where people are paying to be in the group, or are you investing money? Are you building a fund to invest in people?
Yeah, we have the Capitalism Fund is a fund specifically for brands that come from our audience. We raised it in March of 2020. Great time to raise a fund, Craig.
Interesting.
but we raised enough, and we've done 10 deployments with a few pending right now. I believe that's accurate. I don't know I'm not sure that's the exact number, but it's around there.
Yeah.
And a lot of those deals do come, at least the lead flow comes from the incubator. There are also instances in which I will get really close with an e-commerce entrepreneur or someone who's in the incubator, and we'll help them do a traditional raise. So we'll market that out to our list of investors and contacts and invite them to participate in a raise, a capital raise to help that entrepreneur. Of course, no one necessarily needs to raise capital in order to be successful here. I started my business that I sold for eight figures with $600, yeah, right? Yeah. Jason started with his last $3,000. So you don't necessarily need to do that. But when I really believe in a brand that is coming from our incubator, we'll get our hands dirty either with the fund or we'll help them do a capital raise in order to execute upon their vision.
So what do you look for in terms of revenue? And you know, just for people listening who might have an e-com business and say, oh, you know, I could use some money for inventory or something like that. What are you looking for in terms of performance of the company that you're going to invest in? And then what kind of investment do you make? Are you talking like a 500,000, a 2 million? Like what kind of investment do you typically make in your companies?
Yeah. So I'll answer this in two ways. For the businesses that we invest in inside of the fund, our target is we're looking at entrepreneurs who have a low seven-figure run rate. That's $1 to $3 million.
Okay.
Right around $1 to $3 million is where the entrepreneur can be a solopreneur. But if they're going to grow, they have to start building a real team. They have to start casting a real vision. And they have to start making serious investments into the next chapter of their company. That's where we come in. We kind of serve as that friends and family round to help them have the capital to grow. Our starting point for valuations is 1x revenue, 1x a trailing 12 revenue. And we usually buy about 20% of the company, and then we sit on the board for free. So that's, it's like our standardized deal.
Yeah.
However, there's also a different way to answer this question. I will make exceptions on businesses that have a few other things in place. We'll invest earlier in the deal when they have an absolute crystal clear vision about who the audience is that they're trying to serve. And I'll give bonus points to them either having a partnership with an influencer that has an audience they can launch to, or they've built up an email list or a following of themselves of that target market. An example of this is there was someone in the incubator, a guy's name is Grant, his partner's name is Dan. They started a brand called the Thin Line Supplements. Thin Line Supplements was specifically for first responders, especially police officers. An absolute crystal clear target market. Their problem that they're solving is that there is no one directly having the backs of the boys of blue, right? They are enemies in the media. Mm-hmm. No one is their champion. And this brand serves to be that champion. And their proxy for doing it is selling them supplements so that they have the capital to be able to be advocates for these guys and girls, right? That to me is like absolute crystal clear target audience. And it just so happens that I know some of the biggest influencers in that space. So I can bring those relationships to the table, and now I'll consider investing in them or helping them do a raise, even though they haven't crossed their first million yet. So there's other elements to just revenue that will get me excited about investing in a business or advising a business. But those other elements include, do you have the audience, the clarity of vision? Do you know exactly how you're going to launch this and what relationships you're going to bring to the table to make this a success story? Because a lot of people can have a seven-figure business without those things. I'm actually more interested in the vision and the audience and the distribution plan than I am the top line revenue.
Got it. What do you do? Do you have pitch days or do you?
Yes.
Okay. So you do.
Yeah. Yeah. So funny you should ask. We'll get you on the roster for one of these, Craig. So
that'd be cool.
Every quarter we do have a pitch week where our new crop of students has their pitch deck, and they are pitching to a real board of advisors and a real group of investors. I'm on it. My investment partner is. We bring in some of our outside advisors, and they are sitting there like a Shark Tank pitch, giving them critical feedback about what they need to change about their business plan. It's the most fun that we have inside of the incubator because people watch their faces melt as they get absolute clarity about the business that they are going to build, the holes that they aren't seeing, and the relationships that the entire group starts to bring to the table. That is an absolute blast. We do that once a quarter in the incubator.
Got it. Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was wondering. But so you're doing that and you're doing an entire week of that with like 5 to 6 pitches a day?
They have a week in which they are like cramming for an exam.
Got it.
Right? Okay. And then at the end of the week, they're pitching it to a group of advisors.
Perfect. Perfect. That's great. All right. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about how you're doing this. You have 2 kids?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. How do you do? Because we always at Early to Rise, we want to talk about your morning routine. We want to talk about your productivity. How are you doing all of this with 2 kids?
Yeah, it changes. It changes when they get born, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I will not mislead you to tell you that I do the same. I am not the most disciplined man in the world, right? I am not Craig Ballantyne, but I'll tell you my most productive days are when I wake up about 5:30 and I immediately crush my most annoying work. Right. So this goes against, you're going to beat me up, Craig. This goes against what you would say is the most important work. I immediately crush the most annoying work. So that is things like all the communication that flies around, I get it done at 5:30 and it is out of the way. And then I go work out and then I go get ready for the day and sometimes take my kids to school. What that does for me is it gives me the rest of the day of uninterrupted deep work. So if I'm up early and I crush my annoying work and I say, okay, that was my interruptible time. That's where I got back to everybody on Slack and did all of my email and like all my Facebook messages and all the following up with this person, done. I now have, you know, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. or 4 p.m. to do deep, meaningful work. Those are my most productive days.
Got it. That's amazing. That's amazing. And then you also, you posted on Instagram that you have an amazing assistant. And, you know, I've connected with her and she's helped me, you know, when I spoke at your event and all that sort of stuff. Everybody needs to understand the power of having a great team member like that. So walk us through how that relationship works and how everybody benefits. So it's a win-win for her and for you so that everybody gets the most done.
I've always heard that your business career changes when you find that one key hire.
Yeah.
And Inez was mine, right? So Inez is just the empire defender. And she makes sure that things don't get in front of me and distract me from doing deep, meaningful work. Right? And deep, meaningful work is different for everybody. When I was running Sheer Strength, my business partner, my deep, meaningful work was building relationships and doing marketing. And for Matt, that was operations and product development. Those are very different things, but they set each one of us free to do what we do best. Inez does that for me at capitalism.com because she keeps me from being interrupted by constant things that are flying around. She handles legal and accounting and all the things that would take me a week to recover from if I focused on. Yeah. And so she has unlimited upside here at the company. I just decided to trust her with everything, including, you know, my bank account login. And some people ask me, how did you hire people that were so trustworthy? And I said, I chose to trust them before they earned that right.
Got it.
And I tested them.
Right. Small tests all the time.
Yeah, that's right. So it wasn't that I found trustworthy people. You don't know when you hire somebody if they're trustworthy. You trust them with things, knowing that they could screw you. Yeah. And then you give the trustworthy ones more and more and more. So she was the person who really set me free to be able to build the rest of the team, cast the vision and start executing upon what I wanted to build.
Got it. Okay. Very helpful. Now, how do you communicate with your wife for success in the business and the relationship?
Well, I don't know because I don't have a wife, but the parent of my kids, we have a great relationship, and we were pretty clear early on that we each were going to have distinct roles. Distinct roles were her job was to be with the kids, and my job was to provide for the unit. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I actually have a harder time than I think she does. I want to be with my kids. I want to be involved in their lives. And so I don't really have, as of right now, like I don't really have very clear boundaries there. In fact, I just told her this morning, something has started to flip in me where I used to see kids as my responsibility and work as my playground. And now it's starting to flip as my kids get a little bit older. Now I can't wait to go pick up my kids or take my kids for the weekend. Like I can't wait to do that. And work has actually become a more pleasurable responsibility because I see it as a way that I'm going to provide. I never would have thought that before I had kids. But as you know, like it changes everything about the way that you see the world. It changes everything about how you're wired. I think so much more long-term now that there are children that will be affected by my actions. So I will confess, I don't know that I have good balance or good boundaries there. That's something that I'm just now navigating now that my kids are a little bit old enough for me to go back into full on work mode.
Got it. I want to talk now about your optimism. And that's one thing in, you know, I've been watching some of your stories and that sort of stuff. And you have, I have some friends who are very successful, very pessimistic. And I do feel like you've got a great optimism to it. And so like two questions, like, why do you think capitalism will help us and save us? And why will freedom prevail? Like, you're a big believer in those two things, at least if I understood your answers to your Ask Me Anything correctly.
So let's go with that second piece of it, because just like desire, freedom can be held back, but never quenched. Like, it can never be put out. We as human beings crave freedom and search for freedom above all things. It is the natural unfolding of us as a species. None of us like to be restricted. None of us about anything. We do not like to hold ourselves back. We do not like to be contained. We do not desire this. So freedom, as we continue to grow, just expands. You can hold it back temporarily with government control, but it never wins. It never succeeds. It can exist temporarily, but it never wins long term. In fact, every time you've tried to suppress freedom, you've tried to hold it back, you get an uprising that is strong enough to overcome the oppression. Every time. Sometimes it takes a few years, sometimes it takes a few decades, sometimes it takes a few generations. But in today's world, that turnover happens faster and faster and faster. Now we have the technology to circumvent that almost immediately. So when like, even now, I mean, Craig, even today, the we get upset over whether or not we have to put a mask on our face. That's a threat to our freedom. That's how free we are. We're so free that the thing that we push back against is whether or not we will be forced to wear a mask. And 50% of the country says, ain't going to happen. Get off my lawn. That's how free we are. And we debate this. Like, we yell about this. This is the topic that is the biggest threat to our freedom, right? We're so free if that's what we're arguing about. And 20 years from now, it will be that needle will have moved even further. There are some people who are afraid that the government is going to continue to get more and more and more control. But the people who say that, like, I don't believe that, but I'm thankful for those people who fear that, because they're holding the line, because they're the opposite end of the spectrum that is raising up their desire for more and more freedom that will prevent more and more overreach. And so the wave continues to crash forward. It crashes forward and then it rises up with more demand and desire, and then it crashes forward. We are naturally wired to continue to expand freedom. And anytime you see the government threaten against that, you just get a louder and louder push against that. And that current can never be stopped. And so the inevitable outcome is for more and more freedom, for there to be more and more capitalism, for there to be more and more expansion. You can hold it back temporarily, but all that does is make the wave even bigger.
Got it. God, I love that. I love that. And so if you have optimism, you must just feel like there's a ton of opportunities out there. So for those folks that are
delirious, how much?
Yeah. That are like, just like, they would love to hear your ideas on what the biggest opportunities are out there. And then I want to ask you some questions about NFT.
Well, these might be one and the same. So I just gave a keynote at the Capitalism Conference that I believe that we are right on the cusp of what I would call the era of abundance. I think we are the last generation that will truly understand what scarcity is. The idea of not having enough, not enough food, not enough money, not enough housing, not enough whatever. We are the last generation that will understand that. If you look at the emerging technologies and them all coming out at the same time with AI and blockchain and gene editing and all the things that are emerging right now, we are going to see massive downward pressure on the price of goods and services and a massive increase in the amount of capital and opportunity that exists. So I believe our job as entrepreneurs right now is to usher in the era of abundance. And the companies that win next will be community driven. They will have aligned incentives with their customers, and they will have finite missions. So finite missions means they exist for one specific purpose, to help this group of people make this transformation. And then they will go away. Community driven means they're entirely focused on building that group of people of raving fans, not solving the whole world's problems, but 10,000 people, helping them have a transformation. And aligned incentives is where I think NFTs and crypto come into place, because I think that most transactions will happen on the blockchain and happen through NFTs, which create aligned incentives for the customer and the business owner to both win. A good example of this is if I'm planning on tokenizing our membership community. So we have this membership community called the 1%. So we help entrepreneurs become millionaires, and it will make total sense as soon as the technology is easy for us to go away from being a $300 a month membership and just being a tokenized membership. You buy a token to be able to get access to all of the training calls, all of the meetups, all of the courses that are in there. And there'll be 5,000 of them available. And now it's my job, my incentive, to make the asset that they just bought, which is the investment in my membership, as valuable as possible. My job now is to so spoil my community that the value of their asset goes up. How does the value of the asset goes up? Other people on the outside world hear about how amazing this community is, and they want to buy it. And the only way for them to buy it is to buy it from one of the existing members. We now have aligned incentives. I have aligned incentives with my community to make that membership as amazing as possible. We have a finite mission. What's that finite mission? It's to make entrepreneurs succeed in the era of abundance. And we're completely community driven. What does that mean? We have a very specific group of people that we are serving, and they have aligned incentives with us. I think that's where blockchain and NFTs could come in and usher in a completely new style of capitalism that is much kinder, much more in service, much more humble, and forces the entrepreneur to only think about the other person rather than what they're going to get out of it.
Got it. So have you done anything like what Gary Vee has done with already launching your own NFT?
I have not. I'm actively looking for a partner who understands the infrastructure and the coding side of this so that I can do that. Gary has enough pull to be able to get first in line on a lot of those agencies. I don't have that pull yet. So I'm actually actively looking for a partner who has the capacity to be able to tokenize what we want to do.
Cool. I mean, my team's urging me to get on this. A client of mine who's actually, I don't know if he's in one of your masterminds. His name is Dr. Hassan Akram from Germany. And okay. Do you know that name?
That name doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. All right. He's just like, Craig, you've got to get an NFT going. It's just, I understand it. I know it exists. I kind of get it, but I shouldn't say I understand it. It's still a little bit,
May I make this simple?
Yes, please.
So unfortunately, NFTs have been correlated with art.
Yeah, it's like, why would I want one of those ugly... I don't understand.
So you have to forget about the art.
Yeah.
So one of the most successful projects right now is the Bored Ape Yacht Club. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
It's a bunch of ridiculous photos of apes. Yes. I don't want it. No one wants it. It's stupid. This art is ridiculous. No one actually wants the art. Why are people buying Bored Apes? Because the Bored Apes get together in person and you have to have an ape in order to be there.
Got it.
Why do people want the apes? Because they have a Discord in which they are sharing what NFT projects they're all backing that they think are going to be great long-term investments. Why do they want to be in the Bored Ape? Because some celebrity just bought a Bored Ape and is participating in the community and they want to hang out with that community. It is all community. It is all the people that are showing up for this. Now, if you think about a token, like a login to your membership site, to training courses, to lives, to meetups. If you just see it as that, as like, it's a membership card.
It's a secret knock.
Yes, exactly. So it is your secret access into something, and everything that we buy will require that membership. The only difference is, unlike a gym membership where you just pay monthly forever, there will be a finite number of every membership that you want to buy. And if you want to join that gym, or if you want to join that membership site, you will have to buy the membership from someone else, which means that everything that you buy is an asset rather than an expense.
Got it.
So Gary Vee right now is doing this with a restaurant. He has a restaurant group that, in order for you to eat at the restaurant, order at the bar, or have a business meeting there, you need to buy an NFT. You need to buy a membership. You have to be a member of this restaurant to eat there. Now, if you move or don't want to eat there anymore, you sell your membership. So all of the advertising, all of the word of mouth, all the Instagram posts that people are putting up about the restaurant drive up the value of your membership, which then you will sell whenever it's profitable for you or you just don't want to use it anymore. So we're about to see assets replace expenses. Gym memberships, restaurants, membership courses, access to events are all going to be tokenized, which means that individuals and businesses will have the same incentive, which is making the experience as valuable as possible. So for you, what that means is if you have a membership site of 1,000 people, in the future, you will probably replace your $100 or $500 a month membership with a single token. And your job is to make it so valuable that everyone wants to be in. And people who want it in will have to buy it from one of the existing members. And you'll have coded into the contract that you get a 10% kickback on anything that is sold. That's where this is going.
In perpetuity.
That's correct.
Got it. Fascinating.
So don't do an art NFT, Craig.
No.
Make it all about the community.
Yeah. Dude, that's amazing. I'm super grateful that you have your ear to the ground on that sort of stuff.
And think about this, like if you ever raise money,
yeah,
you'll just issue tokens. I mean, Craig, I so wish I was doing a book launch right now. I so wish I was doing because I wouldn't go to a publisher and ask for an advance. I would go to my list and I would say, I'm selling 100 tokens at 3 Ethereum, $10,000.
Yeah.
And when you buy one of the tokens, the smart contract gives you 50% of the royalties of my book. And I'm going to put all 100 of you into a digital mastermind. We're going to meet monthly and it's going to be filled with authors, speakers, audience builders, and we're going to promote each other's stuff. So if my book bombs, you'll be in the most impactful mastermind for promoting your stuff. And so you know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to take the whole $1 million that I raised from this project and put it into marketing for the book to give the best shot possible of being successful. So now, instead of going to a publisher and saying, please, oh, please publish me, I issue an offer to my audience and I raise $1 million for a project, put it into marketing. So I guarantee that it's a winner. 50% of the profits go to my token holders and they're part of a mastermind that is now financially incentivized to make sure that my project is a winner, to make sure that my book gets out to as many people as possible. That's aligned incentives. You see that?
I am starting to really, really get it now.
Isn't that hot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you want to invest in my book right now?
I do. I mean, the book example just made so much sense. Absolutely amazing. Ryan, this has been fantastic. This has been a great education for me. Actually, one last quick question.
Yeah.
Who do you plan on having at CapCon next year? And who would be like your dream speakers for it? Like,
yes. So we almost had this done for this year. It didn't work out, but the person that I want most is Kathy Wood.
ARK investor?
ARK Investments, yes. Okay. So Kathy, I think, lives and breathes capitalism. Yeah. And I love her stance on being on the right side of change, because capitalism is creating change at a faster rate than ever. And most people are on the wrong side of it. They're trying to hold on to the ways of the past, but you can't do that, just like you can't hold freedom back. And so I love that she is investing for the future. And I just admire her conviction about where the world is going.
Well, that's good. That's good. This has been a very uplifting hour, because sometimes I let some of those other voices into my head that are that are worried about things going the other way.
Like, so you and I both have friends who are very scared and concerned right now. Right. Yeah. And it's reasonable for them to be that way because we had a wild couple of years. We had a very uncertain couple of years, but the way that this ends is more personal responsibility, more creativity, a leaving of the major news networks and social news and social sites, more community, more autonomy, more opportunity. And like this ends well. It ends really, really well. We're just gonna have a bumpy road getting there. And I would, my strategy for doing it is to forgive the posts of my friends and peers until they see how abundant the world is going to be.
Yeah, I think it was summed up best in this one post that I saw that, like, we're not heading for a dark age. We're in the dark age right now, and we're heading towards something better. So, you know, I'd like to share that optimism.
Beautiful. I love that. Thank you. Dude,
awesome. All right, everybody listening, go and get Ryan's book, even though there's no NFT associated with this one.
Wish there was.
12 months to 1 million. You will not be disappointed. Ryan, thank you so much. Where can people connect with you and learn more about your incubator and all the good stuff that you do?
Yeah, I mean, the best two ways are my podcast and YouTube.
Okay.
So I'm Ryan Moran on YouTube. My podcast is capitalism.com. I pretty much share everything that I know for free. And then if you want to dive deeper and work closer with our team, you can. But all my knowledge is free or cheap on Amazon. So my podcast and YouTube are the best ways.
Awesome. Thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Craig. Great to see you.
Awesome.